Good morning. My name is Clancy Immersland, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the 9 o'clock marathon meeting and the final marathon meeting. This is what is known as the blow-off. We have sold the merchandise, and now I'm trying to get you moochers out of the hall. I hate to be bound by format. Young lady, would you come up and read chapter 5 as long as you're walking by?
I'm Daisy Gibson, alcoholic. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he were sought. Thank you.
Eric. I would like to ask Rick D if you don't... Oh. You might as well. You're sitting next to the Rick D I was talking about. No, I don't want to embarrass you. Come on up here. No. Yes.
Thank you, Clancy. My name is Rick Downer, and I'm an alcoholic. It really is Rick D. The 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. A loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience, our leaders are but trusted servants they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
It's a little, let me say this. If we do something really remarkable, our hats are off to you. And we're doing something remarkable. Take off your hats. Not the big guy, just the small guy. Yeah. It's been kind of a heartache for me for a number of years at this convention. I was fortunate to lead the 8 o'clock marathon, and Chuck C. led the 9 o'clock marathon. And it was always so, I always used to sit there and think, you know, I'd watch the room slowly fill up near the end of my marathon and think, someday I'll have the 9 o'clock marathon. And how do you think I felt today? When you see a full room and at 9 o'clock, they just poured out the door. They just... I don't care. Our subject this morning is sticking with the winners. And that is something that I guess they've been talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous since 1935, I think. Maybe Bill told that to Dr. Bob. Stick with the winners, Bob. Who are they?
Me.
Yeah. And it seems like such a simple admonition and such a simple piece of advice, but it really is it's easy when you're new because almost everybody is a winner to you. But as you keep going, it's a little, once you've been there a few months even, or even a month, or even a few weeks sometimes, it gets a little complex to see who these winners are. And unfortunately, Alcoholics Anonymous is made up of human beings. And human beings many times are more fascinated and interested by the bizarre and colorful than by the straight and staid personalities. That is why a lot of times in AA, you know, I think about that. I was listening to Johnny Leader's meeting this morning and many other people. There are a number of speakers, Johnny. I'm afraid I'm one. And there are others who have very rather bizarre stories. You know, and then I went back to prison and Mother said, get in there, you little son of a bitch. And then my wife said, put him away forever, crazy bastard. And because human beings are fascinated by the bizarre. And so sometimes people who do a lot of speaking, they call it, they ask them to speak because they have bizarre stories. And sometimes you can go to AA meetings and hear a series of bizarre stories and it can work you right back out of AA. Because you think, I'm not like that. I haven't been in prison 20 years. I haven't been in the insane asylum. I've done these things. This has nothing to do with alcoholism, but we are fascinated by the bizarre. And that's all right. If you stay around, you make it. If you do the things, you'll make it. But also that's true, I'm afraid, in sometimes in meetings. And sometimes people like me, and perhaps like some of you, spent some years around AA fascinated by the bizarre rebels in the back. A man up here just burped on his shoes. Now, if you want to bring up something to vote on, that's next hour. Hey, but it is. And now they've sprung a leak over here. I don't know what. But I have been fascinated more by the bizarre in the back. I was fascinated by the bizarre negative people and not by the straight gray people. Because the bizarre, the rebels are more fun. They're just more, it's more fun to be a dirty bastard. Yeah, I just, that's much more fun than sitting next to some guy saying, and so you get the kind of a negative feeling about who the winners are. There's those gray old pukes in the front row who sit there looking as though they've just eaten a green persimmon and a little thin blue lips and making decisions for your meeting while you sit in the back and sulk. And I've had much more fun with the bizarre people in the back than I have the front. It's just that you can't be with them long because you... either you or they... leave soon. And then you have to keep coming back and finding new friends. And it takes a while sometimes to come to discover who the winners are. And if you take the actions here, if you are ever driven to taking the action, if it hurts so bad that you are willing to surrender your will and judgment to what they think, despite what how it may look to you, you may survive long enough to discover who the winners are. Now, after you find out who the winners are, you may forget it again because there's a compensatory thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. The more you find out, the better you feel, the more you can rationalize you don't have to do these things anymore. So just, you're always on a tightrope forever, for Christ's sake. There's never any rest, either too sick or too well. There's one day in your second year that you're normal, and after that, there's just no end to it. As has been said by a notable man, there's only two possible critical periods in sobriety. One is your first 30 days, and the other is all the time after that. And so it's incumbent upon us, they ask us to stick with the winners. And over the years, I have tried to do it ever since. Stick with the winners. I've sometimes gotten away from it briefly, but not very long. I had come to discover what the winners are, in my opinion. It isn't how long you've been sober. There are some people who have been sober a long time that I have difficulty talking to. I say hello and smile and keep walking. There are some people, it isn't how big your job is. Because I have people in Mercedes coming down and parking in front of the Midnight Mission asking me whether or not they should commit suicide. And like Carol, I offer them techniques that will make it foolproof. Don't shoot out of pills or slashing your wrist. Take a 45. And can I have your stereo? And it isn't how beautifully you talk. We've had some lot of beautiful speakers in AA who have gotten drunk and died. Who have gotten drunk and not died. Who are just miserable creatures again. I was thinking about that in the last few months. I've watched a number of people who I have watched get sober and been with them all the time they survived. And watched them one by one fall by the wayside in double-digit sobriety and go down the toilet. You think, how can this be? Well, it's easy. You stop doing the things that keep people sober, that's all. No big deal. It isn't, there's a feeling sometimes that if you make a mistake or do something wrong, you will get drunk. Not true. If that were true, there would be nobody sober. Nobody sober. The thing is, not making mistakes is not what keeps you sober. It's taking actions that keep alcoholics sober, that keep you sober. Most of us have known people who have done terrible things and stayed sober. Once upon a time, Johnny had the panel down at Terminal Island Federal Penitentiary. And I said to him, I want to get on your panel, Johnny. A guy I sponsor, secretary of one of our meetings, just got arrested for bank robbery, and I want to be close to him. And he was well trained. He got to be secretary of the Terminal Island Penitentiary Group. But by God, he never drank. I'll tell you that. He did everything I told him. I just forgot to tell him not to rob banks. I watched him in the North Hollywood clubhouse years ago and take two bank robbers right out of a meeting and take them away. And they did years and years. But they were sober. People do terrible things who are sober. You can't stay very comfortable, but you can stay sober by taking these actions. And so it seems to me, the winners are the people who are currently trying. Not who were trying last year, not who have become the beautiful folks in AA, not who gather in little enclaves and say, don't tell them about what we're doing because we want a better type of group. Not the people who, to put it bluntly, for example, I heard a conversation in a meeting in the West End of town, not one of my meetings, thank God, I've had to inflict the group conscience on them. Where I was speaking, and someone said, are you going to go to the San Diego convention? And they said, no. You get every type of person down there. Sounds funny. It sounds funny, but I'll tell you something. It's a lot of people like that. They will go to any length to go to a convention or a roundup where the better type people gather, but never to the Southern California Convention. I've been going to these conventions. This is my 25th one, and I'd have been to my 26th one if I could afford it the first year I was sober. And I enjoy it, because I think this is where the Alcoholics Anonymous is. Some conventions, some get together just to be groups of dilettantes. Groups of people you never see at meetings, but always come out of the treatment center in time for the roundup. I don't mean any particular roundup. I'm just talking about a roundup. And I have nothing against any roundup because I have no people say to me, can I go to the Palm Springs? Of course you can. You can go to anything like that. I'm talking about a particular type of people. And we watch people go down after years of sobriety. Why? Because they are no longer trying. They are caught up in prestige. They're caught up in image. They're caught up in being just a little too slick. They're caught up in a little more of the social world. And I'm not putting down a social world. We all have a social life. But AA slowly drops from first to second to third and sometimes fourth. And one day you have no lifeline. And one day the balloon goes up and you have no one to turn to. Because you have in your mind set up, these people are nice, but I've outgrown them. And I'll tell you, it's funny, except when you watch people sober 20 years get drunk. I watched my sponsor, who taught me that lesson, get drunk after 15 years of sobriety and die. And people said to me, Jesus, I was about 2 years sober. So you must be, I hope this doesn't throw you over the edge. Because you're none too stable with your sponsor, and what's going to be without him? And I had to explain to him. That just proves what he said is true. He always said to me, if you don't do these things, you'll drink. I couldn't understand how he could get by with it because he wasn't doing them anymore. When he got drunk, it proved what he said was true. If you don't do these things, you're drunk. And no one's going to do it perfectly. And that's another reason to stick with the winners, I think. The current triers. Because I don't care who you are. If you've been sober longer than 20 minutes, there comes moments and hours and days when you are tired of it all. When you're weak. Don't yawn when I'm saying that, please. He's in a big book group.
the medicine, Johnny.
But all of us have times in which we feel insecure. As you get sober longer and keep active, they should get less and less intense. But we all feel insecure sometimes, and we all get tired. There's an old phrase that wasn't written about AA, but it's written certainly it fits us. It says, fatigue makes cowards of us all. And sometimes when you're tired, and sometimes when you've stretched out, and sometimes when your perceptions are off, and looks as though they're using you, and you've just given so much, and they're just, I'm sick of these whiners, and that phone ring once more, and saying, I want to talk to you about my relationship. I'm having a record put on my phone, and since when the word relationship triggers it, and then this voice comes down and says, Mr. Emerson, go away. Never come back. Source. A source of that. Yes. And we all have a tendency, I think, all of us sometimes, in the newer we are, or when you're in bad shape, it's a bad thing. When you're insecure or feeling out of your out of sorts, or feeling off the tracks, or off your feet, or whatever you may want to call it, alienated. You must force yourself, I think, to stay around the winners. Because insecure people like us, when we get insecure, and when we get off our feet or alienated, have a tendency, we're almost like a chameleon. You tend to take on the coloration of your background. And you want to look good, and if you're running with jerks, to look good to a jerk, you got to act like a jerk. That's how they measure how you're doing. If you want to look good to goofs, you got to act like a goof, because then you fit in. If you want to look good to people who are not trying, you don't try. You take a natural rule of thumb. The reason they say stick with the winners is not that you're going to be wonderful by so doing it, but on the days when you have no way to go yourself, you will adjust to them and keep going. That's why you stick for the winners. You stick for the winners because they are going in a direction. And when you're tired and cross or upset or your feelings are hurt or resentful and the old timers are acting funny, it is so much easier to sit with other little groups and say, I don't want this. There must be some better way to do it. And on and on. And you watch the outriders of death around groups who come by to say, you don't have to do that. Don't listen to those old dictators, you don't happen to do that. You know, we're here to get sober. You're sober, for God's sake. That's all you have to do. And you listen to them, and it sounds all right. They're one day to go down. There are people in this fellowship, I don't think they mean to be. Maybe I'd have been the same way if I'd have got away with it. Like Typhoid Marys. I don't know if you know who Typhoid Mary is. And about 60 years ago, there was a woman. They didn't know who she was. But people were dying of typhoid all over, and they couldn't imagine how it was being communicated around. So if you got typhoid, you're supposed to die. And a lot of people died, and they couldn't imagine there'd be nobody who had typhoid here going over there, and yet they caught typhoid over there. And they finally, after about 3 years and thousands of deaths, found a woman named Mary who had typhoid, but a rare form in which she communicated it but did not suffer from it. That's where the term Typhoid Mary came from. She was a cook. And everywhere she went to cook, they died of typhoid. And she stayed fine. We have a few Typhoid Marys around here, too, I'll tell you. Everywhere they go, they stay sober, but they preach death. And I think that's why it's incumbent upon me to stay with the winners. There are a number of people, as I say, who have been sober a long time, who are winners in any manner that I can judge, except they are no longer trying in AA. And I have almost 26 years sobriety, I say hello and keep walking. You got nothing to tell me. And 6 months ago's triers aren't necessarily today's triers. And today's triers aren't necessarily 6 months from now. And I'm not saying they're bad people, and they may be good people, and they may be better people than I. But I, by myself, it's too big a battle for me to stay sober and know that I must do it on my own forever. So I stay with people who are trying. Sometimes people a year sober, 6 months sober are my chum because they're eager to do things. And sometimes people 20 years sober, I just want to keep walking right by. I'm very always eager to find people ahead of me who are trying and my peers who are trying. Because I tell you, after you've been sober a quarter of a century, there's a lot of people who used to be around who aren't trying anymore. And I wish them well, and I love them. But I'm not going to depend on them. Because the day may come tomorrow, it may come next January 15th. But I just don't feel like doing it anymore. And I want to have somebody out there that says, come on, let's go. And I get up and let's go. Now, the reason that is not to become wonderful. The reason to do that is not to become superlative. The reason that is something infinitely better. To make me feel good. To make me feel secure. To make me be able to walk down any street in the world and not have to look over my shoulder. To never have to wonder, will I get through this? Because I'll get through anything if I'm surrounded by people pulling me in the right direction. I hope that I always have that desire in everything I do. I guess we'll have to call on somebody. It won't be any of you people who are laughing. But I'm always glad to see people ahead of me who are trying because they're a good example. And I'm glad to see one here this morning. Jimmy Andrus?
I'm an alcoholic. Jesus, right now, I feel like one of those old gray-haired bastards sitting down the front row. The persimmon look. But I'm not going to say any more about that. I'm glad to be here. And I'm glad to be in an A&E. I don't know. When I first came to the Alcoholics Anonymous, we didn't have many winners in my group. There were only six of us. And we followed each other and used what strengths each of us had at the time we had it. And I think there are times when I feel great and I feel that I could really go out and help somebody. And other times I feel like some guy stumbling in off the street is a guy that's going to help me. And therefore, I don't know. I just was caught by surprise. I was enjoying this meeting up till now. I've been accused of being steady and staid, and I sat in the second row in my meeting in West Covina on Saturday night, and I got so damn steady and staid, I looked around one night, and there wasn't anybody sitting around me. I just stay in trouble one day at a time, and I love you all, and I'm glad that I'm here, and I like this guy over here, and that's pretty tough to do most of the time. Thank you.
I knew we made a mistake by having participation. Thank you, Jim. I left the last hour. I want to say one thing, you have to sit in the edge of your seat. The last hour, Johnny called on just about every member of the Pacific group, the Big Book group, to participate. And they really did a wonderful job. And I wish I could call on people from our group this hour to talk about Stick with the Winners, but they already know all about it. I think we'll just, for fun of it, let's hear some exotic voices. We all hear each other talk. And Mary, you've come from Dallas for the convention. Get up here and talk funny.
Mary Carling, an alcoholic.
Hi, Mary.
This is my first time at the podium.
Nobody
cares, Mary. In January, I picked Clancy as my sponsor because I think he's the biggest winner in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not the best AA, and I decided that I wanted to be a better AA, and I wanted to have the first person in AA instead of the second best. So I'm glad to be here, and thank you very much.
That isn't quite the way I wrote it, Mary, but it's close enough. Very good, Mary. Well, how'd you like what Mary doesn't know is that most of you know is that years ago when I was in Texas, they put me in the insane asylum. Give me a lot of shock treatments. The magic word every second morning was, "Come here, son, we're going to help you." The chance now for me to repay the favor by helping you. We have a gentleman here from Australia via Singapore. Hey, it's turning into some kind of goddamn discussion meeting. Matt?
I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from the recovery group in Sydney, and, I wasn't too bad sitting back there. I was doing all right. I'm sticking with the winner. I'll tell you a little story. Right? Well, I've been to Singapore just under 6 years sober, and there was one of the guys down there that I was sponsoring. I was doing real well. I've done a little bit better since. And this guy, a guy that Clancy sponsored, got a type of Clancy, and I've never heard a type of his before. And I don't know why the hell I'm nervous, but I am. And on the way home from the meeting one night, he played this type for me to hear, you know, and he said, "Have a listen to this." And when we got back to where I lived, it was about a 30-minute drive. I remember saying to the effect, and I, please forgive me, to the effect that I've had enough of that arsehole. I don't need to have my intelligence inflated.
I asked for forgiveness.
Somebody said to me, "Max, be a little bit honest." But however, he did persist. This was the bloke that I was sponsoring, don't forget. And I got a copy of that type, and I heard a lot of it, and I had a lot of honesty on that type. I heard a lot of the things I wasn't doing, you know. Nancy spoke about running around helping people to die, and that's about where I was coming from. Jesus, I think I'll cry. I've been sponsored, I think, by proxy through the people that he sponsored, and through types. And I'm just real glad to be here, and thanks very much.
Bill Blake, wherever you are, cut that last talk off. We don't want that kind of language on our tape. We have a lady here who is here from Dublin via West Los Angeles. Sheila? No swearing now, Sheila.
My name is Sheila, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Sheila.
As I came up here, he said no swearing, and I just have to tell him I leave that to him. When I was listening to Clancy talk about stick with the winners, and realized in a certain sense that I have to stick with the winners myself. I think many times I identify with people who look like winners. And if I stick around long enough, listen long enough, I will realize that I too have a responsibility to each one of you to be a winner. Because it is in each one of us, standing shoulder to shoulder, that we make this fellowship work. I think many times I have come here and I have come here to take. Being here this weekend and for the last three conventions, I have listened to a lot of winners. And I'm grateful to each one of you that you are here. I'm grateful to you because you show me the way. And please God, one day at a time, I'll be back next year. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think it violates any policy to tell you that Sheila is a nun and the principal of a school in West Los Angeles. And you hear a lot of people in AA complained about how they became alcoholics because when they were little, the nuns were mean to them. I don't judge, I just... I remember kissing Sheila on the cheek at our meeting one night and saying, oh, is it all right to kiss a nun? And she says, as long as you don't get in the habit. You have to wait till 11:30 for the spiritual meeting. But there are missionaries all over the world. Sheila's a good missionary. I just put her because I love her and admire her work. And she does it. She's a good AA. And there's Max is a missionary in Australia. Mary's become a missionary at her club in Dallas. And there's missionaries all over the world. And it's not always easy to be a missionary out there because it's really tough. And we have missionaries in bad places and funny places who carry the message. And I'd like to call out of them now. I'm missionary to Orange County, Clint. I'm Clint, an alcoholic. When I moved down to Orange County, and this isn't true, and I want to say in advance it isn't true, but Clancy told me that going to meetings in Orange County was like going through a sewer in a glass-bottom boat. You see some things you really don't want to look at. It's been an interesting time. I started a Friday night meeting down there patterned after the way I had been brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that meeting thrives and does very well, but oddly enough, I suppose that a meeting that I had nothing to do with starting is as good a source of first-rate Alcoholics Anonymous in Orange County as there is that I know of. It's a men's stag on Monday night, and I go to that meeting, and I really have a sense that Alcoholics Anonymous is working well in Orange County for that hour and a half. It is Laguna Beach is a colorful community. That meeting is a men's stag, and there's a wide variety of sexual persuasions in that meeting. We have, and you know, that's a kind of a polarizing thing, except there are a lot of winners in that meeting. We don't, there's a real narrow line to walk between live and let live and take off that goddamn dress just during the meeting, you know. But, too far. But I really love that meeting, and I love the men in it. I really love the men in it, and some I sponsor, and some I'm close to, and some I'm just watching come along, and we
have found something remarkable, as we always do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that is the fact that if we're serious about working these 12 steps, there are absolutely consistent and wonderful and important answers to the problems of living right here. And it's so tempting sometimes to get into all kinds of other therapies, and it's so tempting sometimes to run up into the canyon and listen to this person and that, and it's so tempting to get into little, as Clancy mentioned earlier, little tight groups that really understand and all of that. And yet we have to live out in the world, and we cannot isolate ourselves in Alcoholics Anonymous, because the integration back into living comfortably within the world is very much triggered by the integration of just being another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I go to that meeting, another meeting said, where we talk about AA and where AA is served up, I feel good and I feel welcome and I feel whole. And I stick with the winners that are in all of those meetings. And I have the reputation of being some kind of a autocratic sponsor, or just sort of none of it's negotiable and all of that. And people say, oh, yes, him to be it. Oh, Jesus. And yet, I think as much as anything, I need to have winners around me, and I need to feel that the people around me are working these steps and practicing these principles in the way they live. And I do better if I'm surrounded by people like that. So if somebody says, will you be my sponsor? I say, you bet, but let's do it this way, the way it says in the book, and then we'll be winners, and we can hang out and have a few laughs. So I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad that I was called on. Thank you. It's something that can never be said too often, I think, because it gets you in the action of being a winner. Clint mentioned he has a reputation of being a dictator-type sponsor. I have that reputation. I know a lot of people who do around the country. And they say, how can these people justify being so mean to their poor babies? I'm going to tell you something. Dictatorship in AA is absolutely impossible without the total agreement of the dictatee. I've often... We have no police force in Alcoholics Anonymous. I wish we did, I'll tell you. But if you are tired of your sponsorship, you just say, screw you, and that's the end of that. There's no more. It would be nice if we had people who come in the night and say, did you say screw you to your sponsor? Do you still have relatives in Akron, Ohio? There's only one reason to submit to dictatorship sponsor, as I did and many people in this room have done, is because it gets you doing things that are better than what you thought you could do. That's all. And if it doesn't work, all you have to do is go back to using your own judgment and watch them all go away. Sit in the back room, in the back row, with the rebels and the critics, and explain why AA... The other day, some lady told me, in our group, AA, this group has changed a great deal in the last 10 years. It really has changed for the worse. And I didn't think of the answer until I got on the way home. Too late. I shouted out the window, but she probably didn't hear it. It has changed primarily because when you were here, came new 10 years ago, you never went through 3 weeks without seeing your sponsor the way your babies have done the last 3 weeks. That's how AA has changed. AA doesn't change. It's just that we get to be, we relax and we stop doing things and we don't do these things anymore. And that's how AA changes. And every generation of people who come to AA hear from ex-activists who are still in the group, well, you could have been here a few years ago. Boy, we really did a lot of things and it was wonderful and we were active. And you might think, Jesus, got here just a little late. If I'd have got here a few years ago, I'd have been involved. I'll tell you, I came to my first AA meeting. Guy took me out of a jail cell over to an AA meeting in 1949. And some guy there told me that I should have been there in 42. 49 was a little late. They were loosening up a little too much. And from then on, every time I went to AA and ever since. And sometimes I feel that way. Because I remember when I was new in AA, and after I was sober just a little while, and we started a little group in West L.A., and they could fit the whole group in my kitchen. And we sometimes did, and we hung together, and we were like Christians in the catacombs, we thought, and just doing wonderful things. And it gradually, because we became activists, it grew and grew and grew, and
Sometimes I think, gee, I wish AA were back the way it was in those days when we were all involved and active in doing things. And then I remember, it is exactly the same way. It is exactly the same thing. And if I want those, if I want to get those feelings, I just have to do those things again. I cannot sit on my can and watch the television and tell them to do it and wonder why AA isn't as exciting as it used to be. You work with new people, and it's a great experience because you can keep reliving this excitement with them. That's one of the great reasons. This morning, somebody said in the previous hour, you never really learn this subject matter until you begin to teach it. Now, that was originally designed for in education. Then it's designed in industry. We used to talk about that 30 years ago in marketing. We were telling salesmen, you'll never really learn your line until you begin to sell it, because then you're going to understand what's important, what isn't important, and so on. And it's certainly true in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can know all this, you can hear all this, you can understand all this, but it really is just kind of data without any decent priorities until you begin to teach it to somebody else. And you watch that light, and you keep teaching until you see the light come in their eyes. And then when the light comes in their eyes, the light comes in your eyes. And it really is great. And with luck, you develop a guy who is, or a girl who is 6 months or a year sober, who has become a winner, and someone new to stick with, while the people whose lights have died because it's all, they become too blasé for these simple actions, you can say adios to. I think there's probably nothing that has helped me more in Alcoholics Anonymous. There are two things that have helped me. And both, I suppose, I did for the worst motives available. One was working with new people. When I was new, I worked with new people for one reason only. Because I wanted the clout of being a sponsor and having babies. I was living in an abandoned car in the AA, back to the AA club, and I had a guy in the front seat for a while. And I used to adjust to him. And the nights I was gone, I let him have the back seat. And turned out he died from pills, but I couldn't smell those, so I never knew it. But then I always worked with people. And after you have a few people you work with stay sober, you find out you really don't need that cloud anymore, but you do it because you found it brings you comfort. And it brings you the light that you cannot sustain by yourself. That's one. And the other single most important thing I know in Alcoholics Anonymous that has helped me as an action is sticking with the winners. Sticking with the people who are trying today. Sticking with the people who are involved. Not the people who have a new reason why they're not doing it, or a new reason why they don't want to be involved so much, or the reasons of all the things that go on. They want you to have unlimited time to listen to their complaints when they feel bad. But they don't want to take any of their time when they feel good to share it with anyone else. They are not winners. They are old poops. The winners, if you leave this convention with a light in your eye, you're a winner. You may not be tomorrow. The light may be out. Then if I suggest to you that you find somebody else with a light in their eye and stick with them until your light comes back, so when their light goes out, they can stick with you. Until your light goes out and their light, then you stick with them. That's all AA is about. There are people in this room who shouldn't be alive. There are people in this room who shouldn't be here. And I'll tell you, it's always a touching thing. I look around the last marathon meeting, and I think, take a look around you. Never again in the history of the world will this particular group of people be gathered, the ones that are here today. If we all agreed to come to the convention next year and go to the last marathon, some of us in this room will be dead by next year. A number of us in this room will be drunk. A number of us will be sitting crying and say, Jesus, why did I throw it away? And explaining. A number of us, a small number, I hope, will have outgrown these second-rate therapeutics and maybe into something more meaningful with the beautiful people. Maybe you'll have developed hypoglycemia. Maybe you have discovered that niacin is the answer. Maybe you will be studying your navel in Camarillo. But some of us will not be here. And I don't misunderstand me. This is not an admonition to you. It's an admonition to me. I may be the one that's drunk next year. I may be the one that's dead. I may be the one who thinks AA is no longer up to my standard. That's why I say this. Not for you to hear it. For me to hear it. So I will be active. So I will keep my phone on the hook tomorrow, no matter who is calling, so that I will take the time to take my efforts to spend with them to continue to keep people trying so they will be there when I need a winner. So we can all gather together to continue to trudge, some days limp, some days gamble down the road of happy destiny, and look around and feel I'm glad that, to me, AA hasn't changed, my group hasn't changed in 20 years. AA has changed it all. A lot of the faces have changed. But these are the same people who were at my first convention 25 years ago. The same people. Different faces, different clothing, different styles, different everything. One thing that they have is the same. Lights in the eyes that say, I'm on a try, which makes me a winner. And that's why you better stick with it. Be careful. Because if you don't stick with the winners, someday you're going to have to turn to the people you're sticking with, and if they have no light for you, you're dead. That's why we do it. We close this meeting. We close this marathon. We invite you to stay for the 10:15 business meeting where we'll elect next year's convention chairman. I want to thank the committee for inviting me to participate. I'd like to thank each of you for being here this morning. I joke a lot, and I laugh a lot. But I'll tell you something. There's nothing that's more important to me. I have to laugh because sometimes I would cry. And if I cried, I'd have to go to the big book group. I just want to close you, honey. There's no time for that. Let's find some tough guy. After a moment's meditation, Harvey, you won't cry. Lead us in the Lord's Prayer.